This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. You've probably heard about or maybe experienced yourself the high cost of housing in Greater Cincinnati, but there's a lesser-known angle of the current housing crisis that you might not have considered: nonprofits that need to rent or purchase living spaces for their clients. As rents get higher and the housing market becomes more competitive, one local behavioral health organization has run into a challenge to fulfilling its mission. Cincinnati Edition producer Nick Swartzell has more.
Ahmad Colvin is relaxing in one unit of a small but comfortable apartment complex near the city limits of Cincinnati. He's 19 and learning how to live on his own for the first time. He and 21 other young people, many of whom have aged out of the formal foster care system, are getting help with this transition process via a program called Independent Living Services, run by behavioral health organization New Path. You might remember New Path by its previous name, St. Joseph Orphanage. New Path has rented these apartments since 2011, but in a few months, Colvin and the rest of the residents, along with two live-in support staff, will have to leave the building, which has new owners and will undergo renovation. That causes Colvin anxiety.
The program has helped me a lot because when I need somebody to talk to, when I don't have anybody else to talk to, I can just come to a staff and be like, hey, you mind if I talk to you for a second? I'm kind of worried a little bit because I wouldn't want that to just go, when that actually helped me a lot just being here.
New Path Chief Operating Officer John Perron says the ILS program has been quite successful. The organization says 85% of residents find stable housing coming out of the program, and 75% are employed when they leave. Those outcomes, aided by wraparound services ILS boasts, are rare in a foster care system. It usually ends abruptly at age 18, leaving some young people without a lot of support. Another participant in ILS, Charles Carr, says he has benefited from the life skills element of the program.
They teach you about contracts, managing money. They teach you about how to cook. And they teach you about transportation, but also about jobs and other stuff, too.
But Perron says New Path faces a challenge in finding a new location. He chalks that up to the sky-high cost of real estate. Cincinnati regularly tops real estate industry surveys when it comes to the recent pace of rent increases. Nonprofit leaders like Strategies to End Homelessness Executive Director Kevin Finn say the high cost of housing has become an increasing issue for housing organizations in recent years. It's one that New Path is now grappling with, Perron says.
The crisis that we have here is that the building that we're currently occupying, because of the real estate market, which we understand, it's going through some renovations and remodeling, and they've requested that we exit the building. And the real estate market, as you know, is really hot right now. So finding one apartment is hard enough. Finding 24 is a huge, huge ask.
Perron says New Path is looking hard for a new location, and has even identified a potential property it would like to buy outright. But that will cost about $2 million the organization wasn't planning on spending. In the meantime, Perron says, the stakes are high, time is short, and nothing is certain yet.
If we don't find a place, there is a very real likelihood that these 22 young people could end up in scattered housing or ultimately even homeless.
New Path has until November to find new apartments for its ILS clients and staff. I'm Nick Swartzell, Cincinnati Edition.
Joining me to discuss the impact of the housing crisis on nonprofit organizations are New Path Child and Family Solutions Chief Operating Officer John Perron. Welcome, John. And
hi, Lucy. Great to be here. Thank you.
Sure. And New Path Independent Living Services Program Manager Josie Monahan. Thanks so much for being here, Josie.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
New Path was formerly known as St. Joseph Orphanage. And if you have questions or comments, you can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. John, let's start with you. Tell us more about the Independent Living Services Program. How long has New Path been operating this program, and who does it serve?
Sure. So we started this program right around 2011, and really it was a response to a very clear need. For the last several decades, we've seen a progressive increase in the number of youth in foster care, and that in and of itself is a challenge, and maybe a story for a different day. But what we saw was, as we were serving youth in the foster care system ourselves, when you would hit 18 years old, it was a pretty stark cutoff. I mean, you really hit a cliff, and then it was, okay, now you're out on your own. And for youth that have been in the child welfare system, possibly lived in multiple houses, possibly had multiple guardians over their upbringing, possibly even having mental or behavioral health issues, you know, it's hard enough for any 18-year-old to try to navigate life, right? It can only be that much harder when you've now been trying to navigate the welfare system, the social welfare system as well. And so we started the ILS program as a way to help young folks that were transitioning into adulthood really gain the skills, the resources, the expertise they needed to really adult well, just like any of the rest of us need. So it was a unique service because we certainly did provide and do provide the physical housing. We help pay for the housing as well as their utilities and any ancillary resources such as furniture, cleaning supplies, things like that. But I think what makes our program a little more unique than other transitional housing programs is really all the way since the beginning, we were really big believers and continue to be in really giving the young folks the tools they need. So what we do is we have resident assistants, we have life coaches that actually live there in the units alongside or are present alongside the young folks to help them with everything from adult life skills, doing laundry, going to the grocery store, getting jobs, completing their GED or getting enrolled in college if that's of interest, to even providing case management, medication management if necessary, mental health services if necessary as well. And the outcomes have been fantastic. When we look across the nation, you know, it's pretty bleak. It's pretty abysmal what you see as the outcomes for young people transitioning out of foster care. On average, well over half of them typically end up homeless once they turn 18. About 75% are unemployed. And, you know, for us, our outcomes are great. Our over 90% of our young folks have stable housing. Very few have any follow-up criminal offense charges. Well over half of our young folks have employment when they exit our program. And so we're really excited about the outcomes that this program has as it continues to invest in kids coming through the foster care system.
Yeah. You mentioned that aging out at 18. I may be remembering this incorrectly, but if memory serves, didn't Ohio change the law within the past few years to allow youth to stay in the system until they're 21 if they agree to do that?
They can, but a lot of the support services that are rolled into that can start to expire around 18. And even if those services are there, what we find is even when we take a step back, for an 18-year-old, I mean, you are for all intents and purposes an adult, mm-hmm. right? And so for any young person, I mean, I remember when I turned 18, shoot, I needed help.
Adulthood.
And so what we realize is we need to have this structure in place, even if those supports are out there in the macro system. They need these supports. We all need these supports. And a lot of these young folks didn't have some of these supports and some of these relationships and this wraparound service growing up. And that's really the service that we're providing for them.
And Josie, you're the program manager for this Independent Living Services program. Tell us, are all the youth who are involved in this program, are they all youth aging out of the foster care system? Are there other reasons young people might become part of this program?
Well, typically, yes, most of our youth that are enrolled in this program all come from the foster care system. We do have two apartments that are reserved through the Mental Health Access Point. Well, that's the Hamilton County Mental Health Access Board, that they can be referred and placed into an apartment through that program if they have like the mental health need or they have like a community provider that can refer them mm-hmm. for these services.
Gotcha. So they just need that additional support. They haven't necessarily been in the foster care system, but they have some mental health needs that require that additional kind of those additional wraparound services, it sounds like.
Yes.
Okay. So John, tell us a little bit more about the history that that your organization has with this property where the young people have been living.
Yeah, so we've been there for several years now. Really, this was one of the first properties we partnered with. And so they've been a great longstanding partner. But like we've all seen, the housing market is really intense. It's really competitive right now. And we understand. I mean, it makes sense in a lot of ways that rents go up when the housing market's hot. And when you can renovate a property and turn it into more luxury rentals or whatever, that can be very profitable for an organization. So we certainly understand that. But the challenge we face is for the young folks and the two resident assistants that currently reside there, you know, we still have a pretty fixed amount that we can contribute towards the cost for resources and for rent. And even if that cost, even if we have the way to afford more of that cost, just the sheer scarcity of units is what's challenging right now. And so what's happening is we've been with this property for several years. They've decided that it's time for them to invest in the property to be able to bring in more luxury level, more elite level apartments, which for us, the message has been either we have to pay a luxury level apartment rate, which we can't afford, not even close, or we have to exit the building in very short order. So that's the challenge that we've been presented with is we've got to find a place for, it's 22 youth, but really 24 individuals with our resident assistants within the next couple of months.
Yeah. We'll continue our conversation about how the housing market is impacting nonprofit organizations in just a moment. And later in the program, we'll talk about monarch butterflies and how an international conservation group has placed them on a red list of endangered species. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We continue our discussion about how the region's red-hot housing market is impacting nonprofits with my guests, New Path Child and Family Solutions Chief Operating Officer John Perrin and New Path Independent Living Services Program Manager Josie Monahan. New Path was formerly known as St. Joseph Orphanage. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. John, we were talking about the need for your move before the break, how the owner of this property is going to renovate it to get some more income coming in from higher rents. Can you tell us more specifically what kind of monthly rent you've been paying and what the increase would mean month to month?
Sure. So generally speaking, we pay somewhere in the high 600s, just shy of about 700 on average for these units plus utilities. And you know, I can't really speak to what the rent would be long term, but the message was clear that it would be dramatically higher than what we've been paying in the past.
Yeah. And I would think that in years past that a program like yours where the rent is guaranteed and where the tenants have so much wraparound support, especially young tenants, would have been attractive to many landlords. Have you found that to be the case in the past? And is that a stark contrast from what the rental market is today?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Lucy. In the past, you know, when the real estate market was a little different, yeah, I think we would present ourselves as a great partner for a lot of these property owners because you're right. We have well over upwards of 24 young people in this program, and that can grow. We're really only restricted by the number of units we have primarily. And we're longstanding clients because even when we have a client move out, we typically have someone that gets moved in. And we take care of all of the moving, we take care of the furniture, we take care of the cleaning, we take care of a lot of the services. So all that to say, I think in years past, yes, we have always been seen as a pretty great partner for a lot of these property managers. I think this day in the current climate, it's just a different situation economically for a lot of property managers. And just the sheer shortage of available properties just makes it a real tricky situation to navigate just from a supply and demand perspective.
Sure. And Josie, remind us again, how old are the young people that are typically in this program? And I guess I'm also wondering, how are they reacting to this? We heard in Nick's feature at the top of our show that there, it sounds like some of these young people are kind of anxious about this change.
Well, the age range of youth that live here is between anywhere from 16 to 21 years of age. And then, you know, our conversations with them, just kind of updating them and letting them know that we have a plan, like we are working on stuff and just giving them enough information that they know that they shouldn't be too worried or concerned. Like staff has been, is a great support for them just to kind of answer their questions and give them information to help them.
Sure. Yeah. I imagine that's important because for a lot of young people who've been in the foster care system, that they've had to move around a lot, right? Either from different placements or different group homes. I mean, I would imagine that stability or at least having a sense of stability is really, really important.
Yeah, a lot. The youth really do value like their home, and when they get accustomed to the area, you know, they're in finding their way around, you know, you can tell that they take a great pride in that. In one youth I know, she, like, once they're kind of in their apartment, we don't move them around, you know, too much, but there was discussion if she wanted to move, you know, to another apartment for different reasons. And she was like, no, I like my apartment number. I don't want that to change. You know, that was stable for her, not having to make all those just minor changes to add her address to everything and tell everybody that she moved just to a different number.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. So, John, tell us what the plan is. It sounded like, are you all closing in on a new building for these youth?
Yeah, so thankfully, I mean, it's a real blessing. It does look like we have potentially found a building to purchase outright. We've been meaning to do this for the last couple of years, just because we see the impact that this program has and the longevity that it can provide for youth, especially if we can be the manager of the property. So it does look like we may have secured a place. So we've put in an offer. We've signed a contract to purchase a location. And it would have 24 units. So it would be the sufficient number of units for us. So we're really hoping that all comes through. We are looking to close in the next couple of months. But even then, Lucy, I mean, the challenge we have is, just like in the introduction, I mean, this is looking to be upwards of, by the time we renovate and clean up, upwards of at least $2 million that just wasn't even expected as part of our budget. You know, so that's certainly something that we are always wanting the community to be aware of, is we are always looking for support. We're always looking for assistance for all the young people that we serve. It does look like we may have a path forward, but we're not out of the woods yet.
Sure. Well, because I guess it's not signed on the dotted line quite yet, it doesn't sound like.
I'm always a big believer of it's not closed until it's closed. Yeah. And so until we hit closing day, my fingers will be crossed. I'll be holding my breath. But once that day comes, we are really hopeful that we'll be able to move our youth into that new building.
Right. And I want to remind our listeners, we're discussing the impact of the housing crisis on nonprofit organizations with New Path Child and Family Services Solutions Chief Operating Officer John Perrin and New Path Independent Living Services Program Manager Josie Monahan. We did get an email from one of our listeners. Mike wrote, I'm someone who turned 18, and back then in 1998, they did just toss you out. Luckily, I went to college, so I was okay, but most of the kids I grew up with were not. I saw a lot of kids fall by the wayside. Mike writes, interestingly, I graduated undergrad and landed at an elite Ivy League grad school, Goodwill Hunting style, and they told me that, quote, it was statistically easier to make it to the major leagues than for a child coming from the foster care system to get a college degree. That's really something.
I just want to say, Mike, congratulations. You know, that is incredible and really an inspirational story. And he's not exaggerating when he talks about that kind of comparative statistics, that it really is that challenging. So way to go. That's incredible.
Yeah. Josie, is a big part of what you all do in the program to really encourage these young people that that their futures can be bright, that they can keep going and get jobs and continue their educations. How much of that encouragement do you need to give these young people?
Yes, absolutely. We do that. And we do that the daily, weekly. You know, they have the staff, the life coaches that are there daily to speak with them, and they're always, you know, verbalizing that. We do these checks weekly, so they have like case manager to help them and always planning on their future planning and goals. And we're always reiterating that we do life skills groups weekly and focus on kind of whatever their barrier is that they need to work on the most. So in different avenues like that is how we kind of educate them and teach them and help promote them.
Yeah.
to whatever their goals they have.
Sure. I mean, it sounds like really a lot of what the program does, and especially these two people who live on site with your clients, is you're kind of filling in that parental role. You know, so many of us, when we turned 18, whether we went to college or did something else, we had our mom or dad or both to fall back on and ask questions and get advice. And a lot of these kids, it sounds like, don't necessarily have that. Is that right, Josie?
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of how we feel, you know, like they don't call us mom or dad or other, but you know, the way that we have to teach them and just educate them, it is similar to what a parent role would do for a kid, their own child, you know, living in their house and preparing them for that next step.
Sure. And John, have you talked with other local nonprofits? I mean, I know that there are other nonprofits in the region that provide housing for young people or vulnerable people. I mean, there are a lot of dollars that flow for programs like this to support people who are maybe having a tough time in one way or the other. Are other nonprofits facing these same challenges?
Yeah, certainly. We talk to a lot of our sister agencies, our partner agencies, our referring agencies. And yes, they're all experiencing similar challenges where there is just not enough supply. I mean, really, it's just that simple. I know several other agencies that are outright building buildings just because, I mean, years past that would never have even been heard of or thought of. And now they're talking of building either large group homes or even apartment complexes because they're just simply, that seems to be the more economical way, which just sounds incredulous at this point, right? But that's just the climate that we're in. And simultaneously, we're all experiencing the fact that our demand for services and our wait lists continue to grow. I mean, it's certainly an output of the pandemic, but it was already growing even before the pandemic. And so what we see is this tension that just seems to be growing and growing, where the need is increasing, but the number of resources are decreasing. So we really do just want the community just to be aware, to provide their support in whatever way they can, whether it's time or resources or insights or even referrals for other buildings. We want to keep growing this service for the young folks that we serve. And so we don't want it to end with just one property. We want to continue to find rentals or other properties to purchase even, so that we can continue to scale out this program even more and meet the need.
And John, let's just to underscore how important this is. I know you're closing in on a solution. You haven't closed on the building yet, but you're getting closer to and more hopeful about a solution to this problem. But what happens if you don't? I mean, what happens if that falls through? What's kind of the worst case scenario if you don't find another place in time for these young people to move to?
Yeah, so we certainly have a plan B and a plan C, but I don't think we're being overly dramatic or exaggerating when we say there is a very real possibility that some of these youth, or even all of these youth, could end up homeless if we didn't have a place for them. They really are coming to rely on us as their housing provider, and we are working really hard. Josie and her team are incredible, and they're working very, very hard to try to find that place, even if this first one falls through, so that we have some backups. But yeah, if we don't have a place secured by the time that we need to exit the current property, the reality or the possibility of homelessness is very real. Hmm.
And you mentioned that you've got so much more demand than you're able to meet. I don't know if this is a question for you, Josie, or you, John. Do you have kind of a waiting list? I mean, do you have a way to explain to our listeners how much more need there is than what you can provide currently?
Yeah, Josie may have some other insights on that. At least from the conversations I've had from just one Hamilton County referral partner that we have, I've heard numbers of they could easily send us upwards of 70 to 100 more youth right now.
Wow.
Right, like today they have upwards of 100 youth that they could refer over to us for support services. Josie, I don't know if you've heard other numbers as well.
No, but I will say, like, right now at this time, we really are moving towards where we may just have a wait list because we only have like a few openings. And once they're filled, like, we don't have any transitions, at least that are planned. So that's difficult.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking with New Path Child and Family Solutions Chief Operating Officer John Perrin and New Path Independent Living Services Program Manager Josie Monahan. Thank you both so much for your time today, and I hope it works out with this new building.
Thanks so much, Lucy. Appreciate you having us on.
Yes, thank you very much.
Up next, we'll talk about monarch butterflies being placed on a red list for endangered species. This is Cincinnati Edition.